The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payden for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Associated Press, Washington Post, U.S. News and World Report, and NBC News. First of all, an article published by the Associated Press on December the 8th, entitled, Pope Francis Makes His First Public Appearances Since Being Stricken by Bronchitis. Rome. Pope Francis on Friday made his first public appearance outdoors since being stricken by bronchitis 2 weeks ago, which forced him to cancel a planned trip to the COP28 climate conference in Dubai. The Pope has been steadily recovering and, for the December 8 holiday, devoted to Mary, kept a traditional appointment to pray at the Spanish Steps. He arrived in a black car and blessed a crowd of onlookers before taking a seat in a chair facing a statue of Madonna. The pontiff prayed for Mary's mercy for all the people oppressed by injustice and poverty, tried by war, adding a special prayer for the tormented Ukrainian people, as well as Palestinians and Israelis who have fallen back into a spiral of violence. Francis also addressed violence against women, a topic that has resonated in Italy in recent weeks following the killing last month of a 22-year-old female student in northern Italy. Mary, we need you as a woman to entrust all of the women who have suffered violence and those who are victims in this city, in Italy, and in every part of the world, the Pope said. Before his appointment at the Spanish Steps, Francis went to the St. Mary's Major Basilica to pray before one of his favorite icons to Mary. He entered the basilica in a wheelchair. Francis earlier addressed the faithful from an open window overlooking St. Peter's Square for the traditional blessing, appearing for the first time to the public since his illness. Francis, who turns 87 on December 17, came down with the flu on November 25 and was forced to cancel a planned trip to Dubai to participate in the UN climate conference. He later revealed he had been diagnosed with an acute case of infectious bronchitis that made breathing difficult. It was the second time this year he has had a serious case of bronchitis. In spring, he was hospitalized for 3 days to receive intravenous antibiotics. Next, an article from the Washington Post, published on December 7, entitled, Nuns by Smith & Wesson Shares, Then Sue to Stop Production of AR-Style Rifles. A coalition of Catholic nuns has filed a lawsuit against gun maker Smith & Wesson, calling for the company to stop producing AR-style rifles, which the women claim are the weapon of choice for numerous mass murderers. The lawsuit, filed Tuesday in a Nevada district court, alleges that Smith & Wesson has repeatedly ignored red flags and failed to respond appropriately to mass shootings in the United States. The lawsuit references some of the deadliest mass killings in the recent U.S. history, including at a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado in 2012, a high school in Parkland, Florida in 2018, and an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas in 2022. Smith & Wesson did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Lawrence Keene of the National Shooting Sports Foundation, a trade group for gun makers, described the lawsuit as frivolous in an interview with the Wall Street Journal. This same group has been filing shareholder proposals and losing. So I guess they're trying a new tactic, he told the paper. The nuns, who represent four congregations, said in a joint statement on Tuesday that AR-style rifles have stolen the lives of so many innocent people and devastated communities across the nation. They added that, as Smith & Wesson stockholders, They have supported resolutions for the company to explain to shareholders the exposure to risk and liability pertaining to its manufacturing of AR-style rifles. These rifles have no purpose other than mass murder, the statement read. They are not the sporting rifles that members of our own families and other responsible gun owners value. Jeffrey Norton, an attorney representing the nuns, said in a statement to the Washington Post that his clients are activist investors, meaning they buy stock in a company to pursue a certain goal. We are proud to partner with these congregations of Catholic sisters who have long sought corporate responsibility through their shareholder activism, Norton said in a news release on Tuesday. The action is not the first of its kind. In 2018, shareholders, including some faith-based organizations, passed a resolution requiring Smith & Wesson to create a report about how it would address the safety risk its products posed, CNBC reported. Smith & Wesson has also faced several lawsuits from shooting survivors and victims' families. Founded in 1852, Smith & Wesson produced pistols, revolvers, and other firearms for more than 150 years before it began producing long guns in 2006. The company's first rifle series debuted in February of that year. Afterward, Smith & Wesson saw a rise in profits and was seemingly unfazed by the exponential rise in gun deaths and mass shootings carried out with its product, the lawsuit alleges. It adds that AR-style rifles were used in mass killings, including in Colorado Springs, Nashville, and others. Smith & Wesson producing such weapons makes it more difficult and more dangerous for law enforcement to respond to mass killings, the lawsuit states, referencing the Robb Elementary School massacre in Uvalde, where officers waited more than an hour before entering a classroom to confront the gunman. The nuns also accused Smith & Wesson of using aesthetic marketing, including advertisements that are geared toward young people, despite the fact that many states impose age restrictions on purchasing firearms. Smith & Wesson also does not have a system for tracking injuries and deaths caused by its rifles, whether from accidental discharge, product malfunction, or deliberate use, the lawsuit alleges. The suit calls on Smith & Wesson to revise its policies to protect the company and stockholders from a repeat of the damaging events. In their statement Tuesday, the nuns urged Smith & Wesson to return to its production style pre-2006, before it manufactured long guns and held itself as a successful beacon of responsible gun ownership. One of the first pages of the lawsuit is taken up almost entirely by a single photo captured in the aftermath of the attack in the Aurora movie theater. The image shows the AR-style rifle the gunman used in the attack laying between a pair of bright pink flip-flops, the ground spattered with blood. "It's horrific," Norton said in a statement. "That's the point." Now an article from U.S. News & World Report, published on December 8, and entitled, "Mormon Church Selects British Man from Lower Tier Council for Top Governing Body," Salt Lake City. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints announced on Friday the newest member of the faith's top governing body to fill a vacancy when a member died last month, will be a man raised in England who had been previously serving on a middle-tier leadership council. Patrick Kieran, 62, becomes the first new member since 2018 named to the Quorum of the 12 Apostles, where members serve until they die helping to oversee the business interests and global development of the faith, known widely as the Mormon Church. The quorum serves under the church president and his two top counselors. All 15 church leaders are men, in accordance with its all-male priesthood. Like most recent appointees, Kieran had been serving as the senior president of a lower-tier church leadership council called the Presidency of the 70, often a stepping stone to higher office. He is well known for his 2016 speech urging compassion for refugees fleeing war-torn parts of the Middle East and Africa. "This sacred call is so very daunting and humbling to me," he said. Kieran, who was born in the city of Carlisle in the Cumbria area of northwest England and was raised in the United Kingdom and the Middle East, according to his church biography. Before joining church leadership, he ran his own communications consultancy and served on the boards of charities, schools, and an enterprise agency. He fills the seat of M. Russell Ballard, who died last month at age 95. As the second longest tenured member of the quorum, Ballard was second in line to become church president. The longest tenured quorum member becomes the new president in a long-standing church tradition, meant to ensure a smooth transfer of power within the faith. The church made history with its last two quorum appointees in 2018 when it selected the first ever Latin American apostle and the first ever apostle of Asian ancestry to serve on the previously all-white panel. Now an article from NBC News published on December 5, written by Megan Lebowitz and entitled "White House Calls Representative Thomas Massie's Ex Post Virulent Antisemitism, Urges House GOP Leadership to Condemn," Washington. Representative Thomas Massie, Republican from Kentucky, sparked bipartisan backlash on Tuesday with a tweet about Zionism that the White House called virulent antisemitism. Massie's post featured a popular meme format and appeared to imply that Congress was not interested in American patriotism, but was interested in Zionism. "All Americans, including House GOP leadership, should condemn this virulent antisemitism from a sitting member of Congress," White House Deputy Communications Director Herbie Ziskin said on X. In response to a request for comment, a spokesperson for Massie dismissed the White House criticism while making an unproven claim about President Joe Biden's mental health. The office of Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican from Louisiana, said in a statement that Biden's efforts would be better spent condemning the 100-plus Democrats who refused to support a resolution condemning antisemitism today on the House floor. Jewish Democratic Representatives Dan Goldman and Jerry Nadler of New York, as well as Representative Jamie Raskin, Democrat of Maryland, had called on their colleagues to vote present on the resolution, which they said was the latest unserious attempt by Republicans to weaponize Jewish pain and the serious problem of antisemitism to score cheap political points. The Republican-authored resolution passed in a 311-14 vote with overwhelming GOP support. While 92 Democrats voted present, 13 voted no, and 13 did not vote. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York, also blasted Massie, calling on him to take down his post. "Representative Massie, you're a sitting member of Congress," Schumer said on X. "This is anti-Semitic, disgusting, dangerous, and exactly the type of thing I was talking about in my Senate address." Massie reposted Schumer's criticism on Tuesday and tweeted, "If only you cared half as much about our border as you do my tweets." Schumer last month delivered a 45-minute speech on the Senate floor, in which he warned of the consequences if Americans do not condemn anti-Semitism. The White House is calling on Congress to pass legislation that includes billions in aid for Ukraine and Israel. Republicans insist that any aid package include provisions to address security at the U.S.-Mexico border. Massey also drew criticism from Matt Brooks, the CEO of the Republican Jewish Coalition, who called the post anti-Semitic, plain and simple. "Shame on you, Representative Thomas Massey," Brooks said on X. "You're a disgrace to the U.S. Congress and to the Republican Party." Zionism is often characterized as the movement for the self-determination and statehood for the Jewish people in their ancestral homeland, the Land of Israel, according to the Anti-Defamation League, an organization that works to combat anti-Semitism. Massey's post had garnered 19,000 likes and had been viewed about 2.6 million times by early Tuesday evening. Now an article published by the Associated Press on December 6, written by Rebecca Santana, and entitled, "A New Homeland Security Guide Aims to Help Houses of Worship Protect Themselves." Washington. A new guide from the Department of Homeland Security released Wednesday aims to help churches, synagogues, mosques, and other houses of worship protect themselves at a time of heightened tension in faith-based communities across the country. The Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA, an arm of Homeland Security, works with faith groups across the country to help them prepare for and prevent targeted violence against their facilities and their members. David Mussington, who's in charge of infrastructure security at CISA, says the goal of the 16-page document is to give usable information in a format that's easy to understand. It's designed to be clear, to be less jargon-filled, and to provide guidance and assistance in getting assistance from us, Mussington said. The guidance, dubbed Physical Security Performance Goals for Faith-Based Communities, outlines how faith groups can better protect themselves, keeping landscaping like hedges trimmed to prevent hiding places for attackers, for example, or only giving out necessary information during live streams of services. It also talks about having a plan in place for when something happens, such as having a predetermined spot where people can go and having a dedicated location for the faith community to memorialize people affected by what happened. There's also information about federal government grants that houses of worship can apply for to pay for security improvements, as well as other resources the department has developed to help communities. Mussington said that the guidelines have been in the works for months in response to concerns his agency has heard from various faiths about how to protect themselves. In this continued heightened threat environment, the Department of Homeland Security is committed to protecting every American's right to live, express, and worship their faith freely and in safety, Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas said in a statement. The physical security performance goals we are releasing today provide churches, synagogues, mosques, and other faith-based institutions with cost-effective, accessible, and readily implementable strategies to enhance their security and reduce the risk to their communities. The guidance, which will be distributed via CISA offices around the country and the agency's network of roughly 125 protective security advisors across the country who work with various communities to provide security advice. The guidance comes at a time of deep unease in many communities of faith across America. Jewish communities across the country have been worried about rising anti-Semitism even before the October 7 Hamas attack on Israel. Since the Hamas attack, Mayorkas said, his agency has responded to an increase in threats against Jewish, Muslim, and Arab American communities in the U.S. Our last article comes from the Religion News Service, published on November the 24th, and entitled, Houston's Hindu Youth Will Soon Have a Summer Campsite of Their Own, by Risha Karmakar. After nearly four decades, a summer camp for Hindu children and teens has a permanent home. On November the 18th, the Hindu Heritage Youth Camp, known as HHYC, the predominant Hindu summer program based in Houston, officially began construction of the Texas Hindu campsite on a 52-acre plot of land. While construction was delayed by the COVID-19 pandemic, the campsite is set to open for a new round of campers by the summer of 2024, just 1 year before the camp's 40-year anniversary. This will unite the Hindu community, said Vijay Palad, a longtime volunteer of HHYC and founder of the HindusOfHouston.org. This is where the future Hindu leaders are going to come from. Saturday's Bhumi Pujan, or groundbreaking ritual to Mother Earth, was attended by members of various Hindu religious organizations. Among them, priests from the 45 temples in the greater Houston area who blessed the land. The Bhumi Pujan meant even more to volunteers like Palad, whose wife and children have been heavily involved with the camp since the 90s. To them, the dream of having a space just for the needs of Hindu youth has finally been realized. Our youth are not going to the temple as my generation are, said Palad, but they will go to camp. There's a reason that hundreds of kids flock to HHYC every year. Uniquely, this is a space for American Hindus by American Hindus, run entirely by the second generation, many of whom were campers themselves. From daily yoga to many festivals like Holi, the camp centers on approachable Hinduism. Life lessons that are deeply spiritual, just as much as they are fun. Philosophical discussions on Hindu values don't come without at least one reference to pop culture, says Bharat Palad, Vijay's 34-year-old son. When you're learning from your peers, people who've grown up with the same life experiences as you, you're way more engaged in the whole process, said Bharat, who started attending the camp as a second grader. The kids understand better how we want to see Hinduism. When the camp started, it was difficult to get 90 campers to commit to a week-long event. Now, HHYC no longer has to advertise or recruit children. The coveted 200 slots fill up almost immediately, leaving 400 more kids on the wait list. We've had the demand, we just needed the supply, said Bharat, who led the charge to find HHYC's permanent home. But the search did not come without its own challenges. For more than 20 years, HHYC was held at a Houston-area Jewish summer camp. When that campground was suddenly sold a few years ago, Bharat became head of the HHYC's steering committee, which has scrambled every year since to find a suitable temporary location. One Christian camp accepted hosting the Hindu campers, on the condition that there would be no idol worship and no group prayer, and that an allotted 15 minutes each day would be dedicated for staff to share the gospel of Jesus Christ. The more we grow as a population, the more people question whether or not we should be spreading our religion on their turf, said Bharat. That was the most important reason why we needed our own campsite. When Subhash and Sarojina Gupta started the group in 1985, they could not predict the scale at which the Hindu community would grow, especially in the Houston area. In the 80s, Hindu immigrants to the U.S. face difficult questions about how to retain a Hindu identity for their children, who, they felt, were quickly assimilating into the American way of life. Holding a summer camp, they said, was the perfect way to ensure the youth would remain in the Hindu fold. Promoting Hindu values, that was our main goal, said Sarojina, not only for this generation, but for many more to come. Since then, the couple has been inundated with calls every year from parents and children who are upset about not making the year's camp roster. So, in 2019, the couple decided it was time to do something about it. The Guptas donated almost $2 million to the Texas Hindu Campsite Project, ensuring the land would be secured for the vision they had had from the beginning. We thought this was our duty, our dharma, to provide a better future for our young kids, said Sabash, who has held leadership roles in prominent Hindu organizations, such as the Vishwa Hindu Parishad of America and Ekal Vidyalaya, which in turn provides a better future for us parents and grandparents. But while the camp has been thriving, they said, members of the Hindu community were hesitant for many years to donate money to a permanent campsite. These families, they said, were more likely to monetarily support their local temples and didn't necessarily see the value in a short-term youth program. Now, Hindu parents are realizing how important it is to have a space just for young American Hindus to indulge in their unique cultural and religious heritage. And critically, they say, these children gain a sense of independence, an attitude of service, and lifelong friends from the experience. This is what made us give all that we are, said Sabash, because we are really convinced about the transformation it is making. The camp will now be able to host many more children and counselors on their site, which is slated to include cabins, a kitchen, a mess hall, a swimming pool, a community garden, and an outdoor theater. I have always maintained that this is a place for every Hindu, said Sabash. We need to work together, added Sarojina. We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. I hope you'll listen again next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Grace Payden, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.